Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
There aren't any Jasons 12 and under. That's a dead name.
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
How many kids do you hear, "Hey, Marky"? It might be almost to the point of Ruth.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
You love that name so much, you don't even go by it.
On 100.5 ESPN.
If you call me Mark, I like my name. I like my name a lot.
The ESPN Wisconsin app.
Wilde and Tosh.
And ESPN Madison on YouTube.
It's Wilde and Touch, isn't it?
This is Wilde and Tosh, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Yesterday we took calls, which would be a Monday, but it was a Monday game, so it was Tuesday. So this must be the Wednesday edition.
Yeah, checks out. Wednesday.
You guys comfy?
I'm telling you, man, I feel like FDR right now.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire edition. The live from Vortex. In downtown Barneveld? Is that an accurate description?
I don't know if I'd say downtown. I'd say adjacent. Like downtown adjacent. Okay. What I would say.
A fun road trip. I'm sorry I can't be there. I will instead be talking to Matt LaFleur and asking him all the hard-hitting questions that folks feel we haven't asked him so far after their back-to-back losses edition of Wilde and Tausch. On 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker, streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and of course everything you need on the all-new, all-redesigned, all-free ESPN Wisconsin app, which you can find both in the Apple and Android app stores. I'm Jace Wilde in Green Bay and adjacent to downtown Barneveld with Riley Yauch in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios. It is Jesse Nelson and it is Mark Tauscher live from Vortex. Gentlemen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jason. This is fun. I love when we do our little road trips.
You know,
together.
This is a big deal, Jason. When we're not having, like, lunch, and Jesse still comes on the remote.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you how great Vortex is. So I just want to paint a picture for people.
Ooh.
Obviously, Vortex is huge with veterans. 1 in 10 employees of the 400 that are out here are former veterans. The American flag lining, they had a big event out here yesterday in honor of Veterans Day. So the flags are flying everywhere, and it's windy, so you really see them wisping through. And this would be of, I think, great interest to you. As we're driving in on the right side, they have basically a par 3 course just sitting there. And you can go play. They're not charging. You can literally – so anyone that's
use
coming through
finder.
The – you can use your Vortex rangefinder at the Vortex Par 3 golf course. But very excited that they've had us out there. Obviously, you know, big with hunter safety. You can come get your scope checked to make sure that when you're out deer hunting and things like that, you're going to be all dialed in. So, and this place is kind of built for you, actually, because dog friendly. I'm telling you, I saw they have 300 acres behind us that is all you got the little golf course, but also walking, and people are out walking their dogs. And when we came out here last time, there's dogs everywhere. They have dog beds by their desks. They're dogs. I don't know how many of their employees have dogs, but their dogs come to work every day with them. It's quite a deal.
There's just one employee like Wilde who has 10 dogs and just brings
them. I don't know if they let you bring the 38 cats. I'll ask if they're cat friendly too.
Fair.
So you could have come with your 100 dogs and your 52 cats and your balls of yarn and maybe come out here to Vortex. But we're excited.
Golf.
It is Very happy to be out here today.
Well, they're obviously a great partner. I'm sure we'll make another road trip there down the road, and I probably will leave our two dogs home when I do it. But that's awesome, and I am jealous. As you guys know, I was hoping I'd be able to come. They were obviously great with us, and the girls love their range finders that they
used. Oh, by the way, their swag and their gear.
Mm.
You see their hats, and I have a pair of Vortex binoculars
for game days.
Because I'm getting older for the games, which I always used to laugh at LePay about. Now I'm sitting there. And on staying on brand, I have my little coffee in the Vortex mug, and I just spilled it all over my papers.
Because you don't have a cover.
Put the top on it.
Yeah. Well, you and Jason Kelsey. All right. Well, it's going to be really fun. Do you guys have anything else, like, do you have anything else planned for while you're there other than Jesse testing out the binocs?
Yeah, we're going to go check out the entire operation again and see, you know, again, Vortex has got, they're in the golf game, they're in the hunting, they're in all, everything that you can kind of get, but again, their merch, and yeah, we're going to have their CEO join us to do, because they've been such a great partner, and in the trivia game, he is going to run trivia today, which is,
wow.
It's a high honor on a
Did he write the questions, or did he ask Joe to do it?
That's a good question.
So Joe Hamilton is the name of the CEO.
It'll be he is Barneveld. We'll call him Barneveld Joe.
Or Vortex. Yeah.
Vortex. Maybe we'll call him Vortex Joe.
That would make more sense.
We'll let him kind of dictate what that looks like. But just a last reminder, again, it is a place you can come and tour. It's free to come in, and they'll show you all the way, all around everything that they have to offer. So if you're in the area, pop on out.
All right. So because Vortex specializes in optics, and because we got a text from our buddy Dan Kelly, retired from AmFam, now teaching at UW, I got probably six or eight other memes sent
to
me.
Six or seven. Yeah.
Trying to do that less. I hear it's passe now. No one does it anymore because parents ruined 6-7.
Nice job, everybody.
I need your help.
All right.
Because the optics, see what I did there, of Matt LaFleur with his back to the field looking at his Microsoft tablets and jotting down notes on his play sheet.
Quick question for you, Jason. Which optics is worse? Murph?
Losing the game.
Down the sweat hill, down the sled hill, arms up, or Matt LaFleur not watching the game and all by himself swiping for different whatever he was doing?
Ice creams. I'm inclined to say Murph on the sled hill, but that wasn't like during a game, and I understand.
No, it's a little different.
Yeah, what was wrong with the optics of that?
No, it looked ridiculous.
That's presidential.
He's just a guy having fun.
No, I loved it, but I can understand why people didn't.
I would say that while I understood what LaFleur was doing, the optics of him not watching the game while it's going on, even though the defense is on the field and he's the offensive play caller, were not great. And so I would say probably because it's in game, Matt LaFleur wins or loses, however you like to look at it. And so my question for you is, because again, I do feel like we need to ask the difficult questions, but I want to ask it in a manner that is going to get an actual answer. How would you ask Matt LaFleur about that today at 1:35 when he is scheduled to speak with us, which I want to thank them for doing it after the show is over so I can be there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you have some fun with it. And I know after a loss it's tough, but I think you could say, have your kids gotten involved in any of these GIFs or
memes?
And I don't know how the memes. Mm-hmm. Because there's some fun ones, and obviously he is a partner with a lot of folks, and there's been fun. So I think there's a fun way to do it. I think you're up against the fact that had they won the game 13-10, I think you could have done it. Losing, and especially the shrapnel LaFleur's taking, and I'm sure he hears a little bit of it, not the extent. I think you're going to have to – I don't know how you do that today. I don't. That's – But then again, there's a reporter asked him if he's worried about getting fired right sure. after the game. So if you're going to do that, then this is child's play.
I would start with it. I would say, and I would go like all in on it. And say, were you playing Candy Crush? Were you ordering pizza?
Right.
And see, like, I would lead with it and see what he does. The room will chuckle.
It's always a challenge to get the first question in. There's a few folks that tend to do that. So I want to ask about that. I do think we have to ask about the play calling. I don't see anyone as a viable option for him to abdicate that responsibility.
The moment he gives up play calling, I think is going to be the beginning mm-hmm. of the end.
Totally agree with you.
That is what he is known for, mm-hmm. and I know Packer fans are a little bit frustrated. You know, I thought it was a very uncreative, conservative plan. I saw some of the things Orlovsky said, who is a Matt LaFleur apologist, in my opinion. He loves Matt
yeah.
LaFleur.
Uh-huh.
And he was tough on Matt, saying you got to let it rip and you got to do some of the things we talked about. If he does that, I do think that's the beginning of the end for him. So you have bad games. You have criticism. That's part in the life of being an NFL head coach. And he's going to have a good week. He needs to devise and scheme some stuff up and let Jordan Love go and play ball against the New York Giants defense that isn't that great. I mean, they're good pass rushers, but there's a lot mm-hmm. of holes. And this should be one of those games that Matt LaFleur and this offense can do some things.
So I'm thinking for that question, Matt, I'm assuming you're not interested in giving up play calling, right? And then give him an opportunity to say, oh, I would do that if I thought it was best for the team. And then I would say, okay, so if you're not going to do that, what are the ways that you can get your offense going more effectively?
That's good.
What more do you need to do then to do that? So I think that's kind of my game plan for that. We've got a game plan for today's show. Jesse and Tausch are live from Vortex. We will have Vortex Joe trivia.
VJ.
Did we check with Joe Hamilton if he's okay with being Vortex Joe?
He's got his own pod.
He's running.
Listen, man, he might be taking over our jobs.
Yeah.
He's got his own podcast.
You're
going to
like
too.
Vortex Joe.
Well, yeah, we're always in the market for a cousin sub or two. That's
true.
Always
as much
necessary.
Time as you take off, I agree.
Indeed. But before we can get to any of the other fun stuff, including Brian Bulaga, who, because it is Wednesday, is scheduled to appear, Tausch needs to tell us about Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
I do, and when it comes to your home, the smart play is to trust Gina Della and her great team over at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. This month, score a whole house of new energy-efficient Pella windows for as low as $297 a month, zero interest for 72 months. And you know what? Got that fireplace crackling? You want to keep all that heat in? Make sure your windows will allow you to do that. Pella will do it. That's a drive you can sustain for years, and you keep your home comfortable. Thanks to that incredible defense like the Packers have, and also Pella Windows has, stopping all of the drafts. Don't wait. Schedule your free consultation today at PellaWI.com.
More with Jesse and Tausch live from Vortex. It's Wildy and Tausch. Jesse and Tausch roll on from Vortex as we honor veterans. Yesterday was obviously Veterans Day, and we spent our time talking, obviously, about the Packers, but a very important piece to what Vortex does, and great that you guys are out there for that. I am very focused on getting to Brian Bulaga on time. I made that my goal this morning.
Good luck.
So, good luck. So let's get to a couple of newsworthy items from yesterday and see if we don't get sidetracked on our way. First, the same man who some folks were wondering if it was time to start thinking about having a conversation about their employment has now won NL Manager of the Year back to back. Pat Murphy wins his second straight Manager of the Year award. Jesse, we have teased you a lot since that fateful day after Pablo Iglesias' birthday, especially after we saw the success they had in the regular season, and obviously you wanted to see them beat the Dodgers and make it to the World Series. That did not occur. But what do you think of Pat Murphy winning yet another Manager of the Year award?
It's awesome. I think with a championship, he could be regarded as one of the greatest coaches in Wisconsin sports history. If he were to win Manager of the Year back-to-back years and then win a championship, everybody likes him. Nobody ever wants him to leave. When Craig Counsell left for the rival Cubs, no one better could have stepped in to take over the Brewers as a manager than Pat Murphy. It's kind of hilarious that Craig Counsell deserved to win Manager of the Year several times during his tenure in Milwaukee, never did, and the minute he leaves, the only person to win it in the National League is the Brewers manager, Pat Murphy. That's pretty funny. I love it. Murph is the best. From the way he conducts the press conferences to the way that he manages the team, his personality, the way the team embodies him, he is the perfect coach. And I think, you know, Barry Alvarez knows him from their time at Notre Dame together, speaks incredibly highly of him. Everybody speaks highly of him. Well-deserved. He should have won the award. He did win the award again. And I hope he wins it again next year. And I will never broach the subject of moving on from Pat Murphy ever again because of what he's done in these first two seasons as the Brewers manager.
I have a
seems a little revisionisty to me here, doesn't this seem a little revisionisty from old revisionist Jesse?
What
I you wanted him fired in May, and now you're saying he should never be fired again? Like,
I was wrong. It's okay to admit when you, I know I'm. I don't do this very often. I am saying I was very wrong to ask when we should start thinking about having the conversation about Pat Murphy moving. Ricky Weeks realizes this guy ain't going anywhere anytime. He moved into a different role with the team. He thought he was going to take over as the manager in a year or two when he came over to be the assistant manager. And now he's doing something else in the front office. He's like, this guy's got it. I'm not. This isn't my job anymore. So, Murph, I hope he stays for a long time. The thing I was actually getting nervous about on the back end of the season, and I didn't want to say this in the midst of the playoff run, if the Yankees were looking to move on from their manager, at what point does...
You start having a conversation about Pat Murphy going to New York.
At what point does Pat Murphy become the most coveted manager in baseball, just like Joe Maddon did with the Cubs a couple of years ago, or like Craig Counsell going to the Cubs? Like, if you're the Yankees, if you're the... I don't know, the Mariners, the Padres. I guess he was already with the Padres at a different time. If you're any team that thinks you're in contention, I would make a call to the Brewers and see if you could talk to Pat Murphy, because he's the best manager in baseball back-to-back years. And that's, we shouldn't feel concerned about that. We should feel good about it because it means he's that good. So I'm not worried about him leaving anytime soon. I just think, like, that's the next step. Like, that is way more likely of happening. That is way more likely of happening.
Yeah, I just have a hard time. I got a hard time taking anything he's saying with a straight. I do.
180 degrees.
That'd be like,
baby,
if I came out and said that the number one seed is really dumb and nobody should ever try to get it. Like, it's that literally
valuable.
Is the same. Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. Blah, blah, blah.
I don't think it's exactly
so
the same.
So it's
thing.
Almost the exact same thing. But kudos to Pat. Kudos to the Brewers. It's a testament to the organization as a whole. And I'm sure Pat would be the first one to say it. And I do think it shows you the importance, not only of winning. Winning, you have to in order to get Manager of the Year. But I think showing your personality a little bit and connecting with your fans and you know, being out there, the pocket pancake bit, and then going and doing a pancake fry. And like those things you don't think matter. I don't know if he would have won it. I think he probably would have otherwise. But those little things do matter, and I think managers throughout our state and around the I see it with Jason Eck down in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Another viral moment yesterday. He's done five or six of those. And to ingratiate yourself to your fan base, I think is very smart. –
And I think the good man, you don't have to spend a ton of time on it. Pick your spots. I think Pat Murphy has done that, and obviously he's won, and he is as Wisconsin and through as you're going to get. And I think that's another reason why the fans love him the way that they do.
Yeah, I love what Jason Eck, your longtime friend, is doing at New Mexico, and they are bowl eligible. He's been fantastic there. I love everything that Pat Murphy has done. He seems like...
I love everything about him, and I don't even know anything about him.
And oddly enough, I have a letter here from Bob Uecker congratulating Murphy.
Oh, God. Let's hear it. Can you do it in Uke's voice?
On his second straight NL Manager of the Year.
Oh, my God.
I was trying to set that up.
That was good.
I did not.
I really hope Pat starts his. I hope he starts his acceptance speech with that. That would be funny.
Okay. Well, that is the biggest news of the day from yesterday. We'll get to Elgton Jenkins when we talk with Brian Bulaga, who is scheduled to appear next. Jesse, did you have something you were looking to add there before I cut you off?
The
whole thing with Jesse right there, it just felt icky to me. Yeah. Like it did. I know you're a big Brewers fan. I am not questioning that.
Usher George.
But you were so adamant about that.
I was not. I asked when we could have a conversation when they were in fourth place and couldn't score a run for the first 7 weeks of the season.
It just feels a little icky to me. That's all.
Let's not judge someone based on one thing they said one time way back.
It wasn't just once. You kept it rolling for a while.
People evolve. And now
people do evolve. I give you that.
Aaron and Slinger text in. Pat Murphy won Manager of the Year twice, but no World Series appearance. When do we start thinking about
Let's have a conversation.
I'm not doing it, Aaron. I'm not touching that. That's all you.
Well played, Aaron. All right, we need to get to Bulaga. That means Tausch needs to tell us about American Family Insurance.
Indeed, and we talk a lot about philanthropy and charity. And you know what, Badger fans? Join my wife and I as we team up with American Family Insurance another year to raise funds towards the American Family Children's Hospital through a virtual toy drive. All donations, every dollar goes towards therapeutic supplies and toys that help thousands of children and families across the country. Plus, whatever dollars you donate, American Family Insurance will match every dollar up to $50,000 so we can raise $100,000. That is our goal through the end of the year. Visit amfamkids.org to donate today.
Again, that is amfamkids.org, and it's great that Tausch and Sarah do this every year. It's one of the awesome things that they do, and it's really fun to be able to see the impact that this has. So, again, amfamkids.org. Is that right?
That is correct, Jason. Thank you.
All right. Speaking of right, Brian Bulaga is always right when it comes to the Packers' offensive line. He joins us to help us understand what's not going right with them next. It's Wildy and Tausch. Friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do. You know what that music means. Almost on time. It's close. Not quite there. He helps us get smarter. He helps us understand the offensive line play. And when there's a outlaw in his neighborhood, he makes sure that the U.S. Marshals Service is on the case. He is Brian Bulaga. Brian, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Packers fans, not as fine. I'm curious, just off the top, they scored 7 points against the Eagles.
7 blanking points?
They scored 13 against the Panthers. They have now lost 2 in a row. They went from being the number one seed if the season ended before Monday night's game to being the 7 seed after that game. Where are you on the concern, panic, worry spectrum?
Well, I would say I'm a little concerned. I'm a little concerned. And why I say that, I mean, because I still love where the defense is at, right? You look at the way the defense is played, and no matter what, you know that side of the ball is always going to keep you in football games, as we have seen, right? Regardless of the fact, that defense will always keep you in and around football games, as they have pretty much the entire season. But offensively, for some reason, it has just been an absolute struggle, like struggle bus. And I had a feeling like Tucker Kraft being gone was going to be an issue, right? Like it was going to be an issue. I didn't think it would look like that. I mean, it was like everyone was lost. Everybody was lost. They didn't know left, right, up. Like it was a mess. And like, and I'm not saying like Tucker Kraft was gone means guys couldn't get lined up. Like that's ridiculous. Like that was just like that's I can't even like describe like that. That's like Pee Wee football. Guys not lining up and get like, come on, like give me a break. Like what's going on out here? Like this isn't week one. This isn't preseason. This is like a huge game, Monday Night Football against the Super Bowl champs. Like we need to be able to get lined up. Like come on, guys. Like I mean. And you know what, like maybe I'm being too hard. Maybe I'm being too hard on these guys, but like, I don't think so. Like, I don't think I'm being too hard.
Jesse's shaking his head. He doesn't think you're being too hard.
No, I don't.
Yeah. No, I just don't understand it. But like, and obviously the one where I'm thinking about, but there's more interest, is like the big play to Christian Watson. We're not lined up. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have too many.
Maybe that's because you've got your fourth or fifth corner playing wide receiver. He doesn't practice there often enough.
And Jason, what did we talk about last week? Like we talked about this about Bo Melton last week. I said there's a good chance he's probably going to be playing a lot of wide receiver.
Yep.
And here we go. He's running out there playing a lot of wide receiver, and it's like this is the problem that we thought we would get to. We had an abundance of wide receivers, and how are we going to get them all the ball? Well, all of a sudden, now we get one back, and guys are come getting injured and we lose Tucker Kraft and then Golden can't play. And here we are, we got DBs now playing wide receiver. And it just looks sloppy. It just looks sloppy. And
it's
just
that word again.
Yeah. It just looks sloppy. And you know, and here's what it comes back down to me, right? Like, and we saw it last year, what carried this offense. It was a run game. The run game carried this offense last year. Like it did. And it disguised a lot of things and took care of this offense. And it made this thing kind of tick along really well, right? It took care of this offense and it protected a lot of these maybe issues while they were getting things straightened out, while Jordan was getting healthy. And then he had that nice stretch. I think, what is it, during Toyotathon when he normally plays really well. You know, he had that nice stretch during Toyota.
I don't think they sell ice cream. They don't sell ice cream. Brian, continue.
Brian Belaga working on his next endorsement.
Hey, once he gets it, I'm on board. But till then, no, sir.
I'm just saying, he always does. He always does really well during Toyotathon, if I remember correctly.
Never heard of it.
I don't know. We're a Chevy group here, Brian. Just so you know, Zimbrick Chevy to be certain.
Well, I'm being honest. I drive a GM product myself. But I'm
we love
saying,
it. Okay,
just,
perfect.
Just saying facts. I'm just saying facts.
Can you just jump in and say, because you're kind of walking around this, and I'm just curious, because we've taken a ton of calls both post game and yesterday. How much of this falls on Matt LaFleur?
Well, I don't want to walk around anything. I mean, I'm not trying to walk around.
I know. Okay.
That's not what I want to do.
Well, jump in.
We have to look at it that he's got to take some responsibility for this. I mean, there's definitely responsibility on the head coach and play caller for it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's the nature of this thing, right? I mean, he obviously knows when his best player. I mean, obviously your quarterback and your tight end are your two best offensive players. Then Jacobs is, and I guess we can compete for 1, 2, and 3. Who's your best player? When one of those 2 and 3, right, Kraft goes down, you have to be super creative of how you're going to now move on without him and make this thing go. It has to, it has to change. It has to be different. It can't be the same. Yep. And it looked like we were struggling for some ideas of how it was going to be different. And that's
what makes you think that when he was putting his iPad up against the equipment bins and it has back turned to the field, is that what made you think he was struggling for ideas?
I don't think it was that. I mean, maybe that could have been it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be that. It could be. I mean, to me, what jumped out, and again, I've never seen. I mean, maybe I've seen it. Maybe when I've been playing, guys have called it out, but I don't really care when they called it out because we just ran the play and did it. Like calling out an inside zone to the right. Like you know, defenses will. I mean, I've heard it before. Like they think they know where the play's going, and they call it out and. You run the play, right? Like, I mean, it happens, right? But the way they called that out and how loud and, like, for sure they were of that play. Like, how,
yep.
Like.
Yes, they were.
Like, it was so loud on the TV copy. I was sitting there watching. I'm like, that guy, like, that is so clear. And then the play ran. And before Jacobs even touched the ball, he was cutting back the other way. And it was, I mean, dead on arrival, right? Like. That to me is what I'm kind of getting at. Like Matt has to be able to change these. He's got to change these things up is what I'm saying. Like he's got to be able to like start changing these patterns and kind of getting them in different formations and setups and changing these variables that.
So Brian, how much of that is you can't line up in certain things and with the injuries, how much of it is you're limited by who you trust that you can go in and line up? Because the last thing you want to do is go fourth and two and you don't line up right. Like we saw, there's a false start. How much of that is weighing on LaFleur when he's trying to do more creative things compared to just saying, Jacob's our best player, let's get the ball to him to go make this first down?
Well, again, that's why I think that's part of it as well. Like I think there's a combination of things happening here. Like, yes, some of it is Matt of trying to be more creative, but at the same time, he's also now trying to juggle putting guys in situations that he thinks that they can succeed in. And he's not sure because there's no proven track record of it. And then you lose Elton, and now you're putting in a different center. And now you got a whole new combination of offensive linemen, and you're not sure if this thing can go, right? And I mean, by all means, the line wasn't playing well to begin with, and now you've thrown another variable there, and how is this thing going to go now? You have no idea, and it just hasn't been going smooth, and now you're throwing in new players to see, like, how, I mean, it's a test every single, like, series, it seems like. You're testing something new, and that's a tough place to be in as a play caller, right? Like, you're seeing if what's going to work. You don't know if it works, and that's a difficult place when you're calling plays, right? You're trying to go back to what you know works, which is why we're seeing kind of that, you know, what everyone's saying, well, why does he continue to run that inside zone? Well, because you know it works, right? Like, that's why that play gets
called. Or at least it used to,
because he knows it works. Well, guess what? Like, it's not working now, right? Like, their teams are calling it out. And, you know, you and I have talked about it, Tausch. Like, we need to get back under center. Like, we got to get under center and run the football. Like, I'm sick of gun runs. Like, there's a time and a place for gun runs.
And we had this discussion all last season. Is that just because Josh Jacobs likes it the other way? Is that – I mean, what? Because that's not how Matt LaFleur came in. He's adjust, and you want to play to your player's strengths. But too much, especially on fourth and one and two. Yeah, shotgun runs, I've never been a big fan of. You think it's Josh Jacobs related, or is that what LaFleur? Why do you think we're doing that so much?
I don't know, because you're right. That was not the way Matt came in. That's not the way we.
It's not his foundation, right?
No, that's not the way we installed that offense day one. Day one, we were under center majority of the time. Like, that's what we were. We were under center. We did a lot of the runs were under center. I mean, Aaron didn't like it per se because he wanted to be in the gun a lot. Like, but oh well. Like, the run game was a lot under center, and Aaron was having to, you know, really run and stretch and do those types of, you know, wide zone type things. And you know, that was the way the offense was. And yeah, and it was good. And now we're seeing a bunch of gun runs, and we've said it a bunch, right? And like, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here, because like, that's what I've been doing with the gun run game. It is so much easier for defenses to see what's happening in the gun run game from the D linemen to the linebackers, and then to the safeties in the second level for them to read and react to the run game. Like when it's fourth and one, fourth and two, and you're in the gun and you're running the ball, those linebackers and those D linemen can key on everything so much easier.
And the TV picks it up.
And like when the D linemen penetrate in the gun run game, it is dead. It's done. It is done. It's over. And that's the end of it. So like, it just has to start changing a little bit from what we saw. And like, do I think it's like, it can't be fixed? No, it can be fixed. It can be changed.
Well, I
think you just have to go back to basics, like day one install type things. Like really day one install type basics. Like I think when you start having these types of injuries, right, and you start to lose these types of players. Now you've lost a guy like Elton now for God knows how long, and has a ton of knowledge and he's your center. Now you're bringing in new guys, and now you look at, you know, your veteran presence on that offensive line. There's not a lot of years, so to speak, right? You need to start shrinking now what they can handle, right? So, like, and now you've lost Kraft, obviously, for a while. I mean, for the year. So he's gone now. And you got to just, like, take this playbook now and, like, shrink it down to, like the basics. And then you could start to build back out, right? Like, do what this team does best. Find what they do best. Like, day one type install things. Find what they do best. And start to go from there, right? Build out from there, because this isn't the team you had week one against Detroit anymore. This isn't that team. Nope. This isn't that same offense. You can't do the same things anymore. Like, so you have to adapt to that and adjust to that. And that would be my opinion. They're still really good players. They're still really good pieces. But you can't expect them to do the same things that the offense that walked out there week one can do. And that's what I mean by he's going to have to adjust and adapt to the guys that are out there now.
And, so, Brian, why not a little tempo? Well, I've been clamoring for this. And last week,
tempo. Yep.
I don't understand. We go down and score. Again, it's maybe a little bit diluted because it's 10-0, and maybe Philly's playing a little softer. But Jordan Love likes the up-tempo part of it. I mean, you saw that was the best he looked all night. Why not at least mix and match and do something different than just doing the same old thing? Orlovsky yesterday broke down, and he basically said what's happening is you're playing too deep. They're forcing you to run the football, and on second and seven, they're running it, and they're not. It's just not working. Let's go a little tempo. Let's try something different.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I think you got to try a couple. You got to try it. you got to try it. But I guess here's where we are at now. Do you trust the guys that are out there to execute that up-tempo and to get lined up properly? And as Jordan's running and he's getting communication sent out, do you trust the guys to get that information passed along properly and line up and get it done? Like, that's my
question. Brian, is that more O-line or is that wide receiver in your opinion? Or is it quarterback when you're talking about trust?
I don't think it's quarterback. I don't think it's QB. I think it's now coming down to I think it's O-line. I think because I mean right now that game yesterday, they did not play anywhere near like that. That was not good. Like, you know what I mean? Like that was not good. So like, yeah, there's going to be trust issues there. Big time trust issues. And now at the receiver position, there's going to be trust issues. You can trust Christian Watson. You can trust Dobbs. You know that. And obviously Wicks. And I mean, but after that, like you have some issues. Like you have some issues there. And that's a big deal.
And who knows if they'll have Dobbs. That's one of the things we need to find out. He left with a chest injury. That is, yeah. I never like hearing that phrase. So that's concerning.
Yeah.
I want to get, as much as I appreciate Dan Orlovsky's breakdown, I am curious, and I want to get to this with Brian on the other side. I'm sorry, if you have Josh Jacobs in your backfield and you're running against light boxes with two safeties back, you damn well have to be able to run the football. Mm. And is that because the offensive line isn't good enough? I want to get into that with you. The one thing Tausch and I disagreed on from the game that I want to ask you about before we transition into the offensive line is this. I had a major problem. You have two timeouts left. You just had Luke Musgrave gain 9 yards on 3rd and 10 on a play that I believe that if that ball is thrown to Tucker Kraft, he either makes that guy miss or runs his ass over to get the first down. Instead, he is stopped short of the line to gain.
Well, Musgrave ain't Tucker Kraft, Jason. That was my point to you yesterday.
We agree on that. My point is right. That's one instance where not having Tucker Kraft had a major impact in the game. Because I don't think they have to worry about 4th and 1 if that's thrown to him. But my issue was, Tausch said he was okay, and tell me if I'm misquoting you, with not calling timeout there.
Yeah.
You have two timeouts. It is 4th and less than a yard. You hurry to the line. You run the same play you've run 3 other times in similar jump-the-ball situations in the game. The defense is shouting the play at you. And you are discombobulated, and then you don't get it. To me, there's only a minute 30 left. It's not like you're conserving your timeouts because there's 4 minutes left and you might need them when you expect to get the ball back. Because they were obviously counting on Nick Sirianni to being a complete idiot with the way he closed out the final seconds of that game when his team had the ball. My question is, were you okay with not going timeout there? Because to me, I thought, call timeout, get your guys ready. This is the play of the game. You get this, and you're going to either tie the game or win the game if you keep the drive going and get into scoring position. So the fact that he didn't call timeout there, I thought was his most egregious mistake, but Tausch didn't agree. What say you?
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't agree with that.
I understand
both sides. And I'm okay
being
wrong, by the way. I want you to be – if you agree with Tausch, great. This was just what I thought.
Yeah, no. I understand both sides of the aisle argument here, right? Like, I am a – I guess you can call me an independent here. I understand both sides of the argument. But I would – as being like, obviously, I don't want to, like, use – oh, I played. But, like, understanding – like, I don't using that, but just like kind of understanding the flow of like that type of situation as the drive's going and you're in that moment. I don't mind continuing to stay out there, not breaking, like, you know, like breaking the momentum and like stopping it and then letting the defense recoup and going again. Now, do I like the selection of the call? Obviously not, right? Like, I don't like the selection of the call. Because
go under center and run the quarterback sneak or run the ball from under center.
Yes, but I don't mind.
It's not a timeout issue. It's a play call issue.
I don't mind continuing on and keeping the offense out there and running another and just continuing on and running a play. Like, I don't mind that. Like, because that stresses out the defense. I think that's one thing. It stresses them out. And two, it continues, I think, as an offense, like, your momentum building, right? Like, when you call that timeout and you break it off right there and everyone goes to their sidelines, they talk about it, that gives the defense time to kind of, you know, break that momentum and talk about it and maybe settle back in. So, like, I like continuing on, but I don't like, going in the gun and running that again. Like, that to me is – again, like, I've talked about it a couple times. Like, to me, it's not what's needed there. Like, you just can't continue to do that.
And they had run two successful quarterback sneaks. One was wiped out by a penalty. So again, maybe you call timeout when you hear them shouting the play call. You said
maybe
that there's been times where you've run the ball into the defense knowing what's coming, and it still worked. It definitely did not work on Monday night. All right, I want to get into the offensive line with Brian. We'll do that next after I tell you about Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. 414-276-6666. 414-276-6666. Go to the website, gruber-law.com. Find out all the great things David and the team over there do in our communities. They just did the basketball camp with Special Olympics and with Bobby Portis and the Bucks. It was awesome. They do so much. And, more importantly, if you've been injured, they make sure you get taken care of. Gruber Law Offices, one call. That's all. We roll on with Brian Bulaga next, so stick around. I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do. Continuing with Brian Bulaga. My buddy Jason, he's a share. As Tausch and Jesse are live from Vortex in Barneveld.
This place is built for Bulaga, too. You're a dog guy, right, Blue?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. This place built for Blue, too.
Is it built for Tausch?
Golf, optics, like, but not, I like everything. Land and orange trees and donkeys. I got the whole thing.
I haven't seen any orange trees.
Yeah, maybe not orange trees, but everything else.
Brian, in 1,000 words or less, what the hell's wrong with the offensive line?
No, 1,000 words or less.
All right, that's seven.
Well, yes, it's very, very inconsistent. Very inconsistent, and unfortunately, it's showing up. And I've kind of been saying this for a while now. It's shown up in the run game for the most part, right? Like I think in the past game, it's hit or miss from time to time. Like I think they have good moments and they have good games that they protect well and they do a nice job. But then there's times where the protection breaks down, right? Like I mean, and there's spurts of it, right? Like there's spurts of where the protection's good, but then there's, you know, I think series where protection just breaks down and Jordan has a ton of pressure and he's got to move way too much and it affects his decision making, or he can't make good decisions and he can't go through his reads properly. But from where I've been saying this mostly is in the run game, and that to me is kind of the biggest impact that, you know, this O-line is not kind of met where they've, you know, set that bar last year is in the run game, and you've seen it kind of, I don't want to say from week one because you can't really judge it based off that, but you kind of look from like week three on and they haven't run the ball anywhere near what they need to be doing, and it's not like they've gotten
Brian, is it
better.
Is it leakage, is it penetration, is it not getting up on the backers? What are the big things that you're seeing that has you say that we're not running the balls? What are the big culprits?
Well, against Philly, I think it was penetration. Like, yep. That was against Philly. Like, that was what I mean, this game, it was Philly. I think early in the season, it was not getting up to the second level. Linebackers were scraping free, and they were able to fill holes and just be sitting there waiting for Jacob. So, like, it's been different culprits in different games, right? Like, it hasn't been, like, the same thing every single game. Like it's the part that's a little bit head scratching to me, is like, okay, like normally, like you'll see one thing that's inconsistent and like the line will work on that in practice and they'll work on that and figure that out and improve on it. And it's like, okay, well they fixed that, but it's been like something different in all these different games. And it doesn't make any sense to me. And then you start rotating guys in and out, and each guy has their own issue, right? Like, and they bring something different into that. And now we have a new signal caller. I mean, I don't mean quarterback. I mean a guy that calls out the declarations at center, and now we're going to add something different to that, right? And that's And I don't know Sean Ryan's experience at center. It's not something. It's not a place that I would put him as my first choice. To be honest with you, it's not like I don't know how much training he's been doing at that. The last time I remember him taking center snaps was at the end of the game in Philly last year, in the playoff game when Josh Myers got hurt. Yeah, and so like to me, the line has just had issues from penetration to climbing to the second level, to moving guys off the line of scrimmage and double teams. It just has been kind of like every area of run blocking. And like when you have areas are pretty much issues on every, I guess, fundamental of the run game, like this is what you're going to get, right? Like this is going to be the issue. And you've seen that with Jacobs's numbers, and you've seen it with his performances. Like, it's not like, to me, it's not Jacobs. Like, Jacobs didn't forget how to run the football. Like, you see him run, and like, he still runs the same exact way. His vision is the exact same. He's doing all the same exact things. You're seeing when you see it up front, it is a very cloudy picture. It is a very muddy picture for him to try to dissect and get through, and it's not good enough, and it's very frustrating when you look back at last year and see how productive they were, and now we fast forward to right now and you see the guy hasn't run for over 100 yards once this year. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. It just makes no sense at all that he hasn't hit 100 yards once this year. And that is, I think, we want to talk about LaFleur or anything like that. Like, okay, like we could talk about the play calling. That is the biggest thing to me, because when you invest that heavily in the run game with the running back, with the offensive line changes, and that doesn't pay off, that's going to be a problem. That's a huge part of this offense. I think I saw the stat yesterday. Their run percentage is like 43 or 44%, right, in the NFL rank, and that's like sixth in the NFL, like commit, like run to pass. And when it doesn't pay off, right, when you're not running the ball well and you're committed to running the ball that much, there's going to have issues, right? The offense is not going to be productive. And that, to me, is what's standing out more than anything with the offense. Because to me, they're so – I don't want to say like – they have to run the football or the thing doesn't work, but they want to run the football. Everything is built off of that, and they're just not able to do it right now. They're just not
so
able
Brian,
to do it.
So if that's the case and they're running it a lot and you're looking at a lot of penalties that come there, there's a lot of third and six plus, which is where defensive coordinators want your offense. If you're Matt LaFleur, do you just kind of give in to the fact, even though you have Josh Jacobs, and say, we need to open it up more? We need to get the ball out of our hands. We need Jordan Love to run this thing and go more pass heavy. Or do you think you can get this fixed? Because now your starting center is out for Lord knows how long. You have a guy in there that has not played a ton of center. Your guards have not been great in securing things and getting a push. So what do you do if you're Matt LaFleur if you don't trust your run game, but you know it's a critical part to how you want to be efficient on offense?
Yeah, it's a great question, and
LaFleur.
It's a tough question too, because we've seen like against Carolina, they had a little issues in pass protection when he got up to that almost 40 attempt number, right? Like he threw the ball almost 40 times, which they didn't. I mean, still blows my mind that we had to throw the ball almost 40 times against Carolina. And we had some pass protection issues from the interior, right? Like, and that's a problem. So if we're going to go the route of we're going to be more pass heavy and we're going to throw the ball a bunch, well, we know what comes with that, right? That's more one-on-ones. That's more relying on guys to win one-on-one matchups and pass protection, which means, well, there's a chance of more sacks and pressures and QB hits. And then
Brian, which side of it do you feel better about from the offensive line standpoint? You feel better about them as pass protectors or run blockers?
pass protectors right now.
Well, there you go.
Pass protectors.
I agree.
Yeah, I feel better about them pass protecting right now. I think right now, and obviously with Elton being out now, this is in flux for me, right? Like, I don't know how this is, like, I know we got a 2/4 of the game with it, right? We got a half a game with a change, and now we have to see how this settles out now, and we'll get a full game. We have to see how it looks. But I don't know how they're going to look now as pass blockers without him making the IDs, and how everyone gets back on the same page. And are we going to see potentially the right IDs, and are we going to be IDing the right linebackers and pressure looks? And obviously now with the Giants and how they, new head coach, obviously a fired head coach, and the defense, they may just go, hey, we're going to pressure a lot. And when you have a new center that isn't used to making IDs all the time, and you come in, you're on the road, and there could be a lot of pressure looks, how does that look? And you're throwing the ball, like, that's a difficult situation. So, like, it's uncharted territory. Right, like, and it makes this whole thing very confusing. It does, and like, I want to go back and just say, like, hey, let's just go back to make this thing super simple, like 3-step drop, inside zone, get the ball out of his hands, play action, bootleg, get Jordan on the perimeter, easy throws. But maybe that's just like. Maybe that's too simple. Maybe that's like what everyone thinks they're going to do, and that's way too simple, right? And that's like, that's not in the cards. That can't happen, right? So I don't know. I think they can get it right because I think they have enough good football players to get it right. But if you continue on to do the same exact thing, right, like in the same formula that we saw against Philly or against Carolina – it'll be the same result because, like, you can't continue to, like I said, play the same way with the same group that you thought you had, like I said, week one, because they're not there. It's not the same group. And I said it when Tucker Kraft went down. He's over 30% of this offense, 30, maybe 40%. And everything runs through Tucker Kraft. So when you remove Tucker Kraft, the defense's attention goes, they can spread their attention to everyone else. And that's a big deal. It's just a huge deal when the defensive coordinators can take their attention away from a main issue, which is Tucker Kraft, and they can put it elsewhere. And that's what's happening right now, right? And then you remove Golden. You remove a guy like last night that can literally run down the middle of your field and occupy safeties and really bother them. You remove him from it, right? And now it's like, what are you going to do? And then the Eagles play two deep safeties. They're daring your offensive. They're daring you to run, and you can't run. So what do you do? And that's kind of the predicament they were in last night. And if you can't figure that out, defenses are just going to carbon copy that, and it's going to be rinse and repeat. So Matt and Steno and Butkus, with those guys up front, they need to figure out a new formula to get that thing rolling. They have to get it rolling because, like, doing what they've done the last 2 weeks, it can't continue on that way. And they know it. It's not like I'm telling them something that, like, or I'm saying something that's, like, foreign to them. Like, what, I mean, 7 and what did they score against Carolina? 13.
20 points in 2 games at Lambeau.
Yeah, 20 points in 2 games. I don't think that they – I mean, I'm pretty sure they know that that can't continue. So it's not like a foreign concept.
Brian, last thing for me on the offensive line. How much of the issues is that they went out and got Aaron Banks and he has not played well? When he's been healthy, which is not frequently, he hasn't played great. He did not have a great night, obviously. On Monday night, how much of that is the root cause of their otherwise offensive line issues as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't played well enough, right? Like, and when you go out and and pay, I don't, what was it, 84 or 85 million? I don't even know.
Yeah, 26 guaranteed, but pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, when you pay that much and it's a prized left guard, and when you plug him in and now you're moving essentially a Pro Bowl guard over, and you're redoing this offensive line and it doesn't pan out, and obviously he's in and out of the lineup, and when he's in, he's not performing the way you thought he would. It's a big hit. It's a big hit. It impacts things quite a bit, and it messes the dynamic of what you thought you would have up, right? Like, it's not like I'm going to sit here and say it's all his fault. It's just him. Like, I'm not going to say that,
right?
Because that's not it. Because it's not, right? Like, we can go down pretty much from left to right and all around, and we could do that if we want. I'm not going to solely blame Banks because
right.
It's not just him. But they expected him to be a very, very high performer, right? And he's coming into an offense that he's very familiar with, coming from San Francisco. It should have been a very smooth transition that, hey, you come from San Fran, you come here, it's pretty much the same thing, maybe a few slight differences. And it just hasn't been a smooth transition by any means. And he's been injured and in and out. So, yeah, it's been a difficult few months, and it just hasn't worked out quite yet. So, yeah, I mean, that's tough. And now you lose Elton.
Mm-hmm.
And now how does this thing look? And that's a tough...
And you're not suggesting that they go to Monk instead of Sean Ryan, or are you at center?
No, I'm not, because I have no idea what Jacob Monk...
Right.
I have no idea what Jacob Monk looks like playing in,
a game that counts.
Regular season games, right? Like, I don't know what that looks like. That's the problem. And, like, I know what Sean Ryan looks like at guard. Like, when he gets, like, when he prepares for a game at guard, I don't know what he looks like when he actually prepares for a game at center.
No, we'll that's find thing, out.
Right? Like, yeah, we're like, we're going to find out if that's – because I think that's the way they're going to go.
Yeah.
You do.
Right? Like, yeah.
What else are they going to do, Jason?
Yeah.
What else would they do?
That'll be the way they go.
I don't know. I just – there was the situation at right tackle earlier this year when Zach Tom wasn't available, and they put Darian –
Do you think they're going to put Zach – Do you think they're going to put Zach Tom at center?
No.
Oh, the Domofsky dream? You put him at center? Oh,
wow. Yeah, no. No, what I was going to say was when Zach went out of a game, they went to Darian Kennard, right? Right away in the opener. And then when Zach didn't start, they started Anthony Belton with a week to prepare. And then when he played one snap in Cleveland – they played J-Mo at right tackle. So they tried three different things. All I'm saying is it possible that they might go with the status quo and go with Sean Ryan? They might go with Jacob Monk. I don't think there's a third option there. I don't think they're moving Zach Tom to center, despite the Hall of Fame predictions of some. I'm just curious if with a week to prepare, they have any thought at all that, hey, We've kept Monk around. We kept him on injured reserve to start the year. Is there any chance they would go that direction? That's all. I have no idea.
I think you have to go, like, right now, like, you are in, like, we need to be as sure and secure as we possibly know we can be, right? Like, we have to, like, who can we trust the most right now? Like, who do we know we can trust the most? Like, that's where I think they need to be. At this point in time, right? Like, you've lost two straight. It's been ugly by all stretch of the imagination. It's been ugly. You need to get this thing going in the right direction. Like, who do we trust, like, right now to get this thing going in the right direction? Like who is it? And, like, I don't think you can take a gamble. Like, I don't think you can gamble on it and be like, okay, well, then go after the first quarter. All right, put Sean Ryan back in there. Like, put him back in there after he didn't take the bulk of the reps in practice. Like, you can't.
Well, they're always
like
trying
not
to find a way to replace him. So that wouldn't be, that would make sense if that's what they end up doing. Blue, before you go, Jordan Morgan, just give us a quick minute and a half on how you feel like he's played
And do you still think he's going to end up being a tackle rather than a guard?
Yeah, I still think he's a tackle. I still think he's a tackle. Long story short, I think he's a tackle. I get what you're saying.
I think I understand where you're going. Okay.
Long story short, I think he's a tackle.
Okay.
Brian Tauschel.
So just to sum it up, we have a center that we don't know or trust or really know what he's going to do this weekend. We have a left guard who, by all accounts, has been very, very disappointing. And a right guard who is definitely better suited to play tackle and has not played very well at guard. Is that a quick summary that I think you can get on board with?
Yeah. It's what we're going with, yeah.
All right.
The Cliff's Notes version. The Tausch Notes
version. Yeah, I like
version.
Throwing a little Cliff's Notes right at the end of it. Okay.
Brian, we appreciate you, buddy. Thanks so much.
Oh, I didn't even tell him Wisconsin won and Iowa lost this weekend. I was waiting all segment.
Sorry, Jesse.
Storm the field.
I saw.
I
watched the ending. I saw you guys win. I saw.
Yeah, it was good.
Big win for Bradley, too. Thanks, Brian. Yes.
All right, guys. Take care.
Tausch,
That was depressing.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
No. Listen, man, I'll be fine. I'm saying if you're sitting here thinking that there's going to be some quick fix or all of a sudden this offense is going to become juggernaut-y, I didn't sense that that's going to happen.
Did not sound like it from Brian.
Nope.
We better be ready to win a lot of games, 14-13, 17-16. Like, this is going to be – Yeah.
All right. I want to ask you a follow-up to start the 10 o'clock hour about the offensive line. We will do that. You know, they may not be protecting very well, but I know UW Credit Union protects your money and has great member benefits as a member myself.
And helps you grow as well. And for every stage of life, UW Credit Union is here forever. You proudly serving Wisconsin for over 90 years are going to help you reach all of your financial goals. You know what? You love keeping your banking local. You love great member first service and you love great perks like early payday. Well, UW Credit Union checks every one of those boxes. And if you love Wisconsin like I do, you can't pay with anything else. Fandom makes us do crazy things, but boy, does this make sense. Become a UW Credit Union member today. Get your Bucky card like I did. Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions do apply.
The 10 o'clock hour starts right on time at 10:22. It's Wildy and Tausch.